Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Two things before we get started. Wherever or however anyone chooses to donate, if it involves helping in any way unsolved and missing persons cases, we'd like to say thank you. Having said that, if you're looking for something meaningful to donate to, I've got a couple in mind. Murdered in 2007, Brittany McGlone has been denied justice for close to 15 years. It looks like current investigators are going to utilize advancements in technology to try and identify her killer, but they also need help gathering other evidence to bring to trial, should that day come. We would be grateful if you would consider donating to Brittany's Wood County Crime Stoppers Reward Fund, as would her amazing family. If you'd like more information on Brittany McGlone's case, our episode covering it includes interviews with her family, as do our episodes about Leon Lorales, whose case could also use your help. A GoFundMe has been created by Leon's family to help them afford a private investigator to find his murderer. It would mean the world to Leon's family and us if you would help. If you're wondering why a PI is necessary in Leon's 1996 murder case, you can refer back to our episodes, which should make that abundantly clear. We'll provide links in the show notes on where to go to help fund both the Brittany McGlone and Leon Lorales cases. Thanks from the bottom of our hearts. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Convicted murderer of a Round Rock, Texas woman and recanting confessor, Michael Keith Moore. Jimmy Lewis Fennell, a predator cop who got off on watered-down charges after abducting and violently raping a 20-year-old woman in Georgetown, Texas. These two individuals had the means, opportunity, and perhaps the psychopathy to make 19-year-old Rachel Cook disappear on January 10, 2002, but there's no evidence that either did. Even after what was perhaps the largest total-scale search that Williamson County had ever seen. Few individuals, too, have ever worked a missing persons case on the civilian side harder than Rachel's father, Robert Cook. Likely, the constant controversies the Williamson County Sheriff's Office endured, but caused themselves, during the course of the past 20 years, have only burdened and hindered the investigation into Rachel's disappearance. As in the case of Moore and Fennell, there's also no evidence that the two individuals in this episode are responsible for Rachel going missing. At about 1 a.m. on Sunday, October 26, 2003, 24-year-old Jordan Taylor and 25-year-old Pilar Castillo headed to their car in downtown Austin, Texas. What took place next is an incredibly brazen act, especially considering that it took place directly outside Travis County's downtown jail and sheriff's office. As Pilar and Jordan approached the intersection of West 10th and San Antonio Streets, A maroon Mercury Sable sped in front of them, screeching to a halt at an angle, blocking the two young women's path. Two men jumped from the vehicle, rushed toward Jordan and Pilar, and grabbed the two women, threatening to kill them as they screamed and struggled to break free. They had no idea who these men were. They were complete strangers. The women were forced into the maroon Mercury Sable's back seat, and one of the men climbed in beside them. The other hopped into the driver's seat. The two young women continued to try and fight off these abductors, and when one of them was distracted by Jordan while he was attempting to subdue Pilar, Pilar was able to open the door. This all happened in the blink of an eye, a matter of just a few seconds, and in the chaos, before the attacker behind the wheel could pull away, Jordan jumped from the open back door. Though she tried to hold on to and pull Pilar out with her, the women lost each other's grips as the automobile sped off. Jordan bolted to a nearby yellow checker cab for safety as she called 911 on her cell phone. The cab driver told Jordan to get in as she spoke with the emergency operator, and he began following the kidnappers. As he did, he relayed to Jordan the Maroon Mercury's license plate number, and she to 911. But they wouldn't have to wait for 911 to dispatch an officer, since they spotted one as they were in pursuit. After flagging down a police cruiser, patrolman Benjamin C. Martinka began pursuit himself, following the kidnappers and their victim northeast until the Mercury Sable came to a halt at a dead end near Duncan Park. Officer Martinka drew his weapon and ordered the men out of the vehicle, and as he did, Pilar Castillo fled to safety by the policeman's cruiser. At 1:10 a.m., only 10 minutes after their attempt at kidnapping began, the abductors surrendered to police and were taken into custody. Police later praised Pilar Castillo and Jordan Taylor for continually fighting and pursuing, respectively, these predators. Austin Police Detective Richard Faithful commented that he couldn't remember the last time a stranger kidnapping ended with the victims unharmed. Usually, the policeman went on, this type of scenario ends with the victim beaten severely and raped. The cops had absolutely no doubt this was precisely what the men who abducted Jordan and Pilar had in mind. Inside the abductor's maroon Mercury Sable, police found two handguns. One was loaded, one was not. The men involved in this 2003 Austin kidnapping and attempted kidnapping were a 20-year-old citizen of Mexico who'd been in the U.S. for about 3 weeks, and a 25-year-old Austinite who we're going to call Valentino Vasquez. Both men's bail was set at $250,000, and it's likely at least Vasquez made bail since his father owns a major Central Texas construction company. At the end of the day, however, Daddy's money couldn't keep Valentino Vasquez from facing justice, and he was sentenced and served several years in prison after the case finally went before a judge. 19-year-old Rachel Louise Cook went missing on January 10, 2002, more than a year and a half before Vasquez and his buddy attempted to kidnap Jordan Taylor and Pilar Castillo. After we dropped the first part of our coverage of the Rachel Cook case, we were contacted by an individual who was in the area of Williamson County Rachel vanished from when she vanished. This person told us that beginning the fall of 2001 and until the fall of 2002, underground waterline was being replaced along a several-mile stretch of FM 3405. This includes the section of FM 3405 in which Natchez Trail and Council Road begin, or the two main streets that feed the Northlake subdivision, where the Cook home is located. Reports seem to verify that our source's timeline and the location of the waterline replacement is correct. Now, our source tells us that they witnessed Rachel Cook running by on numerous occasions during her routine morning workouts. The workers laying the new water lines would hoot, holler, and catcall to the 19-year-old as she ran by. Among the individuals who took part in this behavior, according to our source, was Valentino Vasquez, one of the would-be abductors and would-be God knows what else of Pilar Castillo and Jordan Taylor in Austin a year and a half later. Valentino Vasquez, we've been told, always sexually harassed women around the work sites he supervised, and judging by his attempts to kidnap and probably rape two women in Austin, that's no surprise. During the waterline replacement, much of the dirt dug up had to be hauled away. Some of it, our source said, area landowners were glad to take off the hands of the workers for projects around their homes. Being the son of the construction company's owner, Vasquez, of course, was a foreman during the waterline replacement project. Part of what he did in his role is drive around asking area folks if they wanted a load or loads of the dirt. This certainly served two purposes. One, it made it easier on the workers since they'd have to travel less distance to get rid of the dirt. Also, it saved some area property owners from having to pay for and have dirt delivered to them. Contractors and workers constructing nearby homes likely took Vasquez up on his offer for free loads of dirt as well. And if you'll remember from part one, a worker spreading dirt at a house being constructed just east of the Cook home witnessed Rachel running by the morning she disappeared. Perhaps some of this dirt was offered up by Vasquez and dumped there by his men. But much of the dirt was hauled to various large and less populated properties north and northwest of the Northlake subdivision. Hundreds of loads of dirt, our source told us, were dumped in these rural areas. The October 2003 attempted kidnapping of Pilar Castillo and Jordan Taylor is hardly the only offense on Valentino Vasquez's record that, along with our sources' accounts, make him a viable person of interest in the disappearance of Rachel Cook. He was given 9 months probation and deferred adjudication for the assault of a family member on September 29, 2001. On October 14, 2002, Vasquez was arrested for the assault and injury of an unspecified family member. He was given 9 months probation and ordered to pay $261 in court costs. Details are scant, but those charges are listed as misdemeanors. After serving time for the attempted abduction in Austin, Valentino Vasquez struck again and picked up a felony charge of assault against a family member. In the description of that charge and conviction is strangulation. If you didn't notice, it was 4 years to the day after Valentino Vasquez and his cohort attempted to kidnap two young women in Austin on October 26, 2003, that the subject of last episode, Jimmy Lewis Fennell, kidnapped and raped a woman in Georgetown on October 26, 2007. While merely a coincidence, it's interesting enough to mention, and the detail is haunting. Our source reported their knowledge of the individual we're calling Valentino Vasquez to both the Williamson County Sheriff's Office and the FBI, but felt they weren't taking the account seriously. While it's likely that most who are familiar with Rachel Cook's disappearance are entirely unfamiliar with Vasquez's story, considering his record and the violent nature of his crimes, he seems to be someone who should be considered.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In 2001, Austin police officer Robert Chody and his wife Beverly took home $51 million after selecting the cash option on an $85 million Texas Lottery jackpot win. Instead of continuing his work breaking up fighting drunks and hauling them in on public intoxication charges on Austin's famous 6th Street, Chody resigned as a patrolman and set his sights on a more politically based profession in law, becoming a sheriff. Being a top lawman was a dream of the man's for as long as he could remember, but getting to that position took time and a reputation. Something Chody had never developed as just another Austin beat cop. After spending years building up a political image and platform, Chody chose Williamson County to run. He won and was sworn in as Williamson County Sheriff in January of 2017. Though many folks called him grandstanding and celebrity craving, the new sheriff without a doubt brought the department into the 21st century by creating an active social media presence, something that undeniably helps find missing people and helps develop new leads, while also gaining a certain level of trust and dialogue between a law enforcement agency and the citizens it serves. In April of 2017, Sheriff Chody decided he'd tackle the disappearance of Rachel Cook. Not only did he assign active detectives to the case, he also assembled several retired and highly experienced homicide investigators. What was essentially a Rachel Cook task force, the first in over a decade, was told to start from scratch, and they did. Chody's men had no shortage of theories. Hell, everyone had theories, but no one could prove anything. There was just no evidence. Still, the team hit the ground running and began chasing down every lead that had ever come in, and the ones still coming. Sergeant Jeremy Brinkman said that they were receiving around 40 new tips every few months, which stacked atop the 1,700 leads that had accumulated before the formation of this task force. There were well over 100 persons of interest. Some witnesses and even family no longer wished to speak about Rachel's disappearance, but detectives began attempting to re-interview everyone past investigators had. Although detectives asked the public nearly 15 years back to forget the mysterious, out-of-place white Chevy Camaro or Pontiac Trans Am, and said that the composite sketches of the men inside had been invalidated, Sheriff Chody and his men once again asked the public to come forward and help identify them. It was important to question the men, he said. The FBI, too, began assisting in the investigation, offering the Williamson County Sheriff's Office resources and technologies that they otherwise wouldn't have had access to, something Robert Cook always wanted, but unfortunately did not live to see. On top of the $50,000 that had been offered for many years by donations and the Cook family, in fact, the FBI began offering the same amount. Now, coming forward with information leading to Rachel Cook was worth $100,000. On this reinvigorated investigation, things moved fast. By June, just 2 months after starting, the Rachel Cook Task Force received a tip that her body could be found 5 miles north of Liberty Hill, behind a house on the 200 block of Chaparral Road. Sheriff Chody and his investigators brought in 4 cadaver dogs who hit on the scent of human remains. The FBI came in and dug an area that was approximately 15 by 20 feet, but unearthed nothing. After 2 total days of searching, they called it off and came back empty-handed. In September 2017, FBI agents began searching the area Rachel was last seen, the Northlake subdivision near her home. Special agent in charge, John Scotta, brought in metal detectors because the fashion-obsessed missing young woman was certainly wearing jewelry when she vanished. If they found anything, it was never reported on. The investigation chugged along, and the following April in 2018, Sheriff Chody announced they had found the white sports car seen in the Northlake neighborhood the day Rachel disappeared after receiving a tip at a media event. Turns out it was a 1998 Pontiac Trans Am, and it was located somewhere in the Dallas area. The car, Sheriff Chody said, is linked to 3 persons of interest in the case. This discovery was exciting and proved that the Rachel Cook Task Force was making strides no other investigators ever had. The Trans Am tested positive for the, quote, possible presence of blood on both the passenger door and floorboard. It was sent to the FBI's lab in Quantico, Virginia, and the full results of the test, Sheriff Chody said, would not be released. In December 2018, along an unspecified road, Sheriff Chody began conducting what was referred to as a mystery dig, perhaps the result of the tip called in by our source of the Valentino Vasquez information, though that's only a possibility and we have no actual knowledge that is indeed the case. In 2019, the FBI's San Antonio office had several billboards put up. The message, "Missing but not forgotten," accompanied Rachel's smiling face along Interstate 35 and other major roads. That year, too, while speaking with the press, Sheriff Chody let slip that human DNA had been found in the white Trans Am. It is still unknown who that DNA belongs to, but it likely has nothing to do with Rachel, since later reports came right out and said that the investigation was moving on to new leads, and that the car had produced no evidence of any value. In January of 2020, the Williamson County Sheriff's Office released updated, digitally created composite sketches of the 2 never-identified men sought for questioning in the Rachel Cook case. These new digital drawings were based on re-interviews of the witnesses who provided the original descriptions. After 18 years, this method feels less than effective, as memory is known to both degrade and be influenced by outside experiences. The new sketches seem to have caused few viable leads, though it did keep the case talked about and in the media. In August 2020, the Williamson County Sheriff's Office asked that a person who provided a tip call them back. They needed more information. Just a few months later, however, Sheriff Chody's department turned into a shit show. Though a few more developments were to come, a major controversy at the Williamson County Sheriff's Office once again hindered progress on Rachel's case, like one had in 2003. Though this was an entirely different beast than Sheriff Maspero's sexual misconduct. Due to Sheriff Robert Chody's less-than-above-board style of managing his department, Rachel Cook's case once again suffered. In August 2020, the national newspaper USA Today announced that Williamson County's top lawman was resisting what other departments nationwide were doing, re-examining the policies and procedures that inevitably contribute to deadly violence that disproportionately affects Black and brown communities. Sheriff Chody not only hired deputies with problematic past policing records, but he also encouraged the use of heightened and, though he did not put it this way, unnecessary force against perps, rewarding such, quote, badass behavior with steakhouse gift cards. Yeah, he did that. For deputies who took part in high-speed chases, too. At least 5 incidents were under investigation by both Texas Rangers and the Williamson County District Attorney's Office at the time. Sheriff Chody had brought in the show Live PD early in his term. He was a beloved figure on the show for a while, particularly because he'd interact with fans on social media. But things turned bad on that front, too. Inexcusably bad and deadly. On March 28, 2019, 40-year-old father Javier Ambler II was driving home from playing poker with some buddies. When he neglected to switch off the high beams on his SUV to oncoming traffic, Williamson County Deputy J.J. Johnson hit his lights and sirens and began pursuing him. It was a minor traffic violation, but Javier wouldn't pull over, and for 30 minutes, a chase ensued. When Javier finally did pull over, he was tased repeatedly by deputies, as Live PD filmed. Even after Javier was obviously going nowhere and told officers he could not breathe and that he was not resisting, they kept tasing him. A total of 4 times, in fact. It was the kind of excessive and completely unnecessary force these deputies' sheriff rewarded with steak dinners caught on camera. Before he took his last breath, Javier Ambler said, "Save me." An autopsy officially listed his death as homicide. After the Austin American-Statesman ran an expose on Javier's death, Live PD pulled out of Williamson County. Sheriff Robert Chody was indicted on felony evidence tampering charges after allegedly helping destroy footage of the incident and Javier Ambler's death. As of this recording in March 2022, the case has not gone to trial, though using his millions in lottery winnings, Chody was able to afford the best attorneys around. The forced resignation of a commander in the department further fueled the fires, after it was discovered he had shared racist, misogynistic, and downright sociopathic images. On social media in 2019, this superior officer posted images portraying dolls in actions such as rape, kidnapping, and the mutilation of a Black football player. Residents of Williamson County had obviously had enough. In the 2020 election for sheriff, Mike Gleason beat Robert Chody by a landslide 30,000 votes. Gleason was quoted as saying he was terminating the problem deputies. The reason the department is currently involved in several multi-million dollar lawsuits, Sheriff Gleason said, comes back to the same small group. A good old boys system that he intends to end, he said. Sheriff Chody's issues were far from the first time the department came under fire, and certainly far from the only time Rachel Cook's case suffered as a result. Perhaps the Williamson County Sheriff's Office has been cursed since Sheriff Jim Boutwell used his position and a guy named Henry Lee Lucas to elevate his name and stature at the expense of justice. In 2001, just before Rachel disappeared, a controversy broke out in the department when Sheriff John Maspero found out 2 of his officers belonged to the Ku Klux Klan. To Maspero's credit, he fired the unapologetic officers upon finding out. But 2 years later, the sheriff was involved in a sexual harassment and public drunkenness scandal of his own. This was during a crucial time in the Rachel Cook investigation, and there is no doubt her case suffered for it. The damage those fiascos caused to both Rachel's case and Williamson County in a whole is immeasurable. When Jim Wilson was sworn in as sheriff on January 1, 2004, he'd already fired or demoted a total of 26 deputies before even stepping foot in the door. His reasons included failed drug tests, sexual harassment allegations, assault, and insubordination. But the damage to Rachel's case was already done, and it wasn't just because of these controversies. Texas EcuSearch founder Tim Miller said Sheriff John Maspero botched the case from the very beginning by not taking her disappearance seriously, and for days insisting she had just run off. By the time he decided to actually work the case, Tim Miller said, it had already gone cold. Even Lieutenant John Foster with the sheriff's office remarked that Sheriff Maspero screwed up royally. There was never any reason to think Rachel ran off on her own. Never. Foster also criticized Maspero's methods when he finally did begin to take the disappearance seriously. Saying the Cooks should have been interviewed immediately, but instead Maspero protected them from scrutiny. Lieutenant Foster, now retired, didn't think the Cooks had anything to do with it, but it was Investigation 101, he said, to rule in or out those closest to the victim at the beginning. Maspero didn't allow that. In any investigation, Foster poignantly said, when you put your bad foot forward, it's usually haunting for the duration of the investigation. Also frustrated that Williamson County deputies kept initially insisting his missing daughter had run off to Mexico with a boy to party, Robert Cook remained that way through the years as he wondered how much time was wasted in the beginning. Might they have found Rachel, or at least a clue, if the sheriff's office had taken Robert and Janet seriously from the get-go? But the parents also made a major mistake, Robert himself acknowledged, when they waited 24 hours to report Rachel missing. They believed, as many do, that a person has to be gone 24 hours before a missing person's report can be filed. But that's a myth, and one often perpetuated by television cop shows and movies. As Robert became more and more involved with other missing persons' cases, he began dispelling such myths and educating people on the correct and most efficient ways to get their loved ones found. Robert learned from the ex-FBI profiler he hired to volunteer quickly for a polygraph test, and in fact that every member who might be considered a suspect should do so immediately so that they can be ruled out and the investigation can proceed that much faster. Rachel, her father said, was just a little too old for the media to latch on and stay put, so he had to become creative and work tirelessly to keep her name and face out there. He advised everyone whose loved one comes up missing to do the same. But Robert Cook wasn't blind. He also acknowledged that male, low-income, those from certain professions, and minority missing persons will have a much harder time forcing the media to cover the story in a meaningful and consistent way. Robert Cook promised Rachel he would find her and warned whoever took her that they will be judged in this life or the next. He would never give up, Robert said, and he never did. In Austin, Texas, on November 5, 2014, 59-year-old Robert William Cook died after battling a long illness. Some say it was his broken heart and obsession with bringing Rachel home that is most responsible for his death. His daughter Joanne commented that he felt like he had failed her sister by not protecting Rachel and then not finding her. But the truth was, Robert Cook had done more than anyone, and everyone knew it. In Robert's obituary, Rachel was listed as one of his survivors. In 2021, under new Sheriff Mike Gleason, cold case investigators publicly announced that they were seeking a man who was an acquaintance of Rachel Cook. He worked in the cattle and horse industry, and detectives had reason to believe this individual might have discussed details of Rachel's disappearance, attempting to distance himself from any involvement by speaking in the third person. This presumably means Williamson County Sheriff's Office detectives believe this person was indeed involved. They said he lived in Georgetown in 2002 and has since traveled all over the state. The department asked that media outlets in Central Texas, the Concho County area, Amarillo, and Terlingua share the information. The new sheriff in town, Mike Gleason, was the patrol sergeant on duty the day the call came in that Rachel Cook was a missing person. The department has chased over 2,000 leads, but Gleason believes that it will take someone coming forward who was either involved or has knowledge of those who were for the case to be solved. Any actual evidence, he said, most likely no longer exists. The entire point of our second episode of Rachel's story was to describe, through Robert Cook's writings, the things families of missing persons cases go through. In his journal, he talked a lot about trying to close out or freeze Rachel's credit card accounts, but since no death certificate existed, he was not authorized to. For years, because of this, the Cooks had collection agencies continually calling their home, trying to find Rachel and collect their money. Just another constant reminder of their anguish. There's one more thing to talk about before we close. When Rachel moved to California for college, she fit in fast. She took a job at a Hooters restaurant and at a bakery. From the bakery, she often took the day's unsold donuts to San Diego's Balboa Park to give to the homeless there. Also, after her move to the Golden State, Rachel broke it off with her longtime boyfriend, Thomas. As a result, Thomas became embittered, angry, and even cried to her new boyfriend, Greg West, over the phone. This individual, who was back in Texas, of course, was emotionally unstable, Greg would later suggest, and while she was on break back home in Texas, just before she disappeared, he found out Rachel was going to a party and approached her there. A heated fight broke out between Rachel and Thomas. This ex-boyfriend had shown up at the Cook home while he and Rachel were in high school, drunk and belligerent more than once. Little else is known about Thomas, but this is something to think about. The Cook family once said they've always felt someone Rachel knew was responsible for her disappearance. Rachel Louise Cook stood 5 feet 2 inches tall and weighed 120 pounds with blonde hair and auburn streaks at the time of her disappearance. Her eyes are described both as hazel and blue. She has a navel piercing and several piercings in each ear. On her left shoulder, Rachel has a tattoo depicting two heart-shaped cherries, and on her left foot, near her pinky toe, is a tattoo of a black star. If you have any information about the disappearance of Rachel Louise Cook, please contact the Williamson County Sheriff's Office at 512-948-2911 or their cold case tip line at 512-943-5204. The Austin American Statesman, the Austin Daily Texan, KXAN.com, KVUE.com, Fox7Austin.com, and the Journal of Robert Cook were used as sources for this episode. You can support the show at patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There, you can get the show ad-free and enjoy Patreon-exclusive episodes that tell stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. I get those out as much as I can, which is not as often as I would like. Another way you can support Gone Cold is by leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Thank you in advance. Those reviews help Gone Cold's visibility, which helps new listeners find us, which increases the potential for someone with information hearing the show and reporting what they know to authorities. Thanks for listening, y'all.